My head, I think it is Ms. Raphael Wee McQuinna, but I don't know your designation. The legal counsel for SARS. I'd like to thank you, Ms. McQuinna, for coming in and also waiting. And your apology was given. Thank you. So if you could address us now.
Many thanks, Chairperson and members of the committee. Yes, at the outright, I would like to mention that SARS mandate is to collect taxes in the best interest of the state. This is very critical to in order to achieve revenue targets, even under the most.
I must ask everyone to take their seats.
As I mentioned, I would like to state that SARS mandate is to collect revenue in the best interest of the state. This it does, even though the economic conditions are adverse, because we need to achieve our revenue targets. Now, I also would like to draw a distinction between the private and tax debts. Private debts are those that individuals enter into in their commercial or trade relations. However, tax is incurred by operation of law. It is not an optional liability, and every person is subject to the same rules. Indeed, tax is a social compact between the state and residents and traders in the country. This is because in exchange for taxes that are collected, government provides fundamental services to its people, from road infrastructure.
Yeah, no, look, members, we may all have a certain, you know, disregard sometimes for the tax man. I'm sure we don't, actually. But I think when someone is here, let us honour them as one of the basic tenets in our Constitution, respect.
Many thanks, Chairperson. I'll proceed. Extending debt relief as proposed to taxes will only lead to imbalance in the South African tax system. This I say because the effectiveness of a tax system relies on fairness. People in the same position are taxed the same and according to their taxable incomes. If the fairness or the perception of equity is disturbed, there will be a direct impact on the willingness of other willing taxpayers to comply. And one of the SARS, you know, strategic outcomes is to increase compliance with legislation. But if tax relief, if the tax debts are included in the tax in the debt relief as proposed, then it can only lead to non-compliance. The tax legislation already contains adequate provisions that afford debt relief for taxpayers who are financially distressed. Hence, we feel that it will not be necessary to include it in other non-tax legislations. If a tax debt is irrevocable, then SARS may write it off in terms of Section 197 of the Tax Administration Act. Even though tax is required to be paid in full and on the due date, SARS may still grant a tax debtor an installment arrangement in terms of Section 168 of the Tax Administration Act. The factors that SARS consider are prescribed in law, and those include a debtor's liquidity and whether collections actions would be harsh to the taxpayer. SARS may compromise a tax debt when the tax debtor is distressed, and this is in terms of the provisions of Section 200 of the Tax Administration Act. And when compromising such tax debt, SARS do consider inter alia the value of the tax debtor's assets and whether a compromise may adversely affect broader taxpayer compliance. We submit that there is a comprehensive regulatory framework to authorize installments, compromise, and write off of taxes, which the NCA does not provide. SARS controls the application of debt relief through the following. We have internal policies and processes. Some specific officials are designated to write off or compromise tax debts. There are committees in existence within SARS to debate and consider each write-off or compromise to ensure the legislation is followed strictly, and the commissioner is required by legislation to annually report on certain debt relief measures to the Auditor General and the Minister of Finance. We submit that if the NCA is extended to include tax debt, this will subvert and override tax legislation and principles that already accommodate tax relief to distressed debtors. Some legislations regulating the collection of taxes, tax debts, are primary legislations and cannot be superseded by secondary legislation. We also submit that there are possible implications for the debtor and the lender depending on the surrounding circumstances of the debt. For example, the amount of the debt reduction, if applied, could be a recoupment in terms of Section 19 of the income tax, which amount of recoupment may be added back to the taxpayer's gross income in terms of Section 84A of the income tax. And the amount of the debt reduction would be a bad debt deduction for the lender, claimable against gross income. The result is reduction in a lender's taxable income and a reduced amount of tax liability. In summary, as mentioned, tax is a social compact between the state and its citizens. Tax is different to commercial or private debt. The forgiveness of a tax debt can impact on tax compliance, and if it does, revenue targets as given by the Treasury will not be met by SARS, and I submit that this can easily lead to downgrade of the country collection status. The reduction of tax debts should remain within the tax legislation. The reduction of tax debts must give effect to tax principles and therefore should be contained only in tax legislation. I submit that existing tax legislation provides adequate debt reduction and postponement measures to accommodate tax debtors who are in a financial distress. These provisions are appropriate to tax principles and therefore there is no need for tax forgiveness contained in non-tax legislation. There are tax consequences to the borrower and the lender if there is a tax forgiveness, but the surrounding circumstances will be considered in detail. That's the end of the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Makwena. Just listening to you, referring to certain things has raised a number of questions, I'm sure, and concerns. So let's look at members who've now heard that presentation. Honourable MacPherson, followed by Honourable Albert. We did get your late apology. Anyone else at this point? No, those two.
Thank you very much. With respect to page 4, where you say that tax legislation already provides or contains adequate provisions that afford debt relief for debtors who are financially distressed, I'm not sure that you consider that the same as what this intended bill is looking at, because you use the word may a lot. So it's at your discretion Now, how would you treat someone who owed you 50,000 rand in tax liabilities, who had no income, no assets, and had no reasonable prospects of doing so? I'm not sure that you would treat them the same as what this bill intends to do so. So I'm not sure that it would be fair for you to say that, you know, there are provisions to afford debt relief. I'm not sure that that's the same that we are intending to do so. And so I'd just like to, you know, I'm not fully on board that, or I'm not convinced why someone shouldn't be treated the same as, you know, why someone shouldn't qualify for tax debt relief, and someone shouldn't be able to qualify for credit debt relief, because I don't think that the provisions are the same.
No, I understand the...
No, I know you haven't been with us before, but we prefer to get the questions first and comments and then for you to respond. It also gives you an opportunity to see if you can't link some of them. Honourable Williams? No, who was it? Honourable Alberts, my apology.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and my apologies for being late. Maybe we'll go back to with SAA after their bailout that they've received from the taxpayer. on that basis, regarding SARS's contribution, the money that SARS collects from taxpayers and it goes into the fiscus, that money doesn't belong to government and it doesn't belong to the state. It is held in trust on behalf of the people of this country. And when the people of this country are suffering due to various economic effects, and we can talk about the reason for those things on a later stage, but when they do suffer, SARS always thinks to say that we are special. We do not have to comply with the law. We are not equal to the rest of the country. We have special laws that can actually take people's money out of their bank accounts. We can threaten them with jail. We can do many things and intimidate them into paying us, give money to politicians who just spend it on nonsense, to say the least, and yet when it comes to helping the poor and destitute, private institutions must comply with the law and they must write off certain debt, but not SARS, because they are special. What makes you so special? Tell me. Why is SARS, with so much powers that they have received from the executive and from parliament, so reluctant to come to the party and say, we will also carry the burden and share the burden? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Alberts, Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair.
Honourable
My question is on slide 4. It says there that if tax debt is, you can't get it back, then SARS may write it off. I'd like to know how much you've written off to date, and also I'd like to know what's the difference between SARS writing off the debt and this proposed bill that we've got writing off that debt. Because for us as well, we're obviously going to not write off everybody's debt. We're going to write off the poorest of the poor, or people whose circumstances have changed. I might have had a job last year, and I might have incurred tax debt, but I haven't been working all of this year and never will find another job again. So surely I must be able to write that debt off if I qualify for the criteria that is set up in the amendment bill. So I just want to know, why do you think that you can choose to write off debt and then our legislation can't do that job for you, basically? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mantash.
Thank you, Chairperson. I it's interesting to listen to what Sash is saying. Which one? Oh, I've listened in with interest to what Sash is saying, Chairperson, and I would like to ask a question. Whether Oh, what is it that makes them so special? That they, as I listen to them, are opposed to the proposed bill, yet they collect public monies, and they cannot rescue South Africans from the quagmire of indebtedness. Are they not an entity established to be part of the solution of the people of this country? And looking at the highest interest rates that they charge people who are indebted to them, what is it that they're doing with that money?
Honourable Mantos, I have one which I'm just going to give an example, Ms. McQueen, as well. You made a reference to was page 4 and should a debt relief program under NCA include tax debt. Now, you're a retailer, all right, and you have 1,000 clients, and of those 1,000 clients, they're all left on average owing 2,000 on average. That's 2 million, all right? So now we persuade the furniture dealer and we say, look, you've got to write this off, you know, because we've got this debt relief bill. And then you come as SARS, for example, and say, ooh, now I expect now because you've written this off, it's 2 million you have had to write off. You then want a tax reassessment on what you've paid. Would that be part of what you'd be looking at? So if they wrote this off, this 2 million off, now they never got it, remember? Now how would you treat that furniture dealer? Thank you. Over to you now, in whatever order you'd like to respond to us.
This is basically one answer to all the questions that have come through. For Mr. McPherson and Mr. Roberts.
Albert.
Albert, oh, okay.
They're the mics, you know.
SARS is not coming here with the attitude that it does not care for the citizens. Its mandate is specifically that to collect in the best interest of the state in order for the citizens of this country to be taken care of. However, we have tax legislation that regulate the collections of taxes, and if taxes don't get collected, they turn into tax debts, and we have mechanisms of treating tax debts. The legislation is very specific. In the event that a taxpayer finds it difficult to pay the tax debt, the taxpayer approaches the receiver, and insofar as maybe, you know, where the taxpayer has been retrenched, unemployed, or the debt is such that it cannot be recovered, hence the write-off debt provisions in the legislation, or the taxpayer can come and ask for a debt compromise. My difficulty is, if there is primary legislation that deals with tax debt, why should then the very legislation be superseded by a secondary legislation? It can never happen. Why are you saying it's not true? Is it not true that we have provisions that deal with... There shouldn't be dialogue. The legislation
is only one chairperson. Yes. You wait for the chairperson.
Thank
to
you. Thank you, Chair. There is a legislation, and I have referred you to the provisions of the Tax Administration Act and the Income Tax that deals with write-offs and debt, you know, compromises and also settlements. The legislation is very clear. There is not a single tax debtor who has been denied the relief that's provided for in the legislation. Now, my argument is, why if there is primary legislation that deals specifically with how tax debt should be dealt with, that this very tax debt should be regulated by a secondary legislation like the amendment bill? And I place it on record, SARS is not special. SARS is a public institution, and we need to act in the best interest, both of the taxpayers and the state. It's a constitutional mandate, and we cannot disrespect that. The other question is, how much has been written off? Unfortunately, I don't have the figures. I did not know that this question will be asked, but it will definitely be taken care of in the annual report. On the chairperson's...
Chairperson, I requested the amount of money that's been written off by SARS, and SARS have now said that I can look that up in the annual report. I think that's not acceptable. I think they should send us that. Send us that figure and tell us exactly if it's written off or if it's like put on hold until you can afford to pay. You know, if it's written off completely, tell us about that as well. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Honourable William. I think our normal practice on this committee is to respond in writing outside of the meeting.
Thank
but
you.
If there's any information that isn't immediately at hand, just do that. That's fine.
And Chair, may I point out to Mr. Williams, I did not refer you to the annual report. That would be very disrespectful of me. I said it gets reported in the annual report. I was not aware that you would need this information. If you need it, we will respond to you in writing. On the question of the chairperson, the scenario that you highlighted, once the furniture dealers have actually, you know, written any debt, then that amount of the debt deduction would be a bad debt deduction. Yes, for that lender, because they would have written it off, therefore it is there will be a tax benefit to that. Thank you.
Person followed by Honourable Williams.
Thanks.
I indicate Honourable Mantush has been waiting patiently. So can I just hold off for a second? Let us first have the Honourable Mantush, then the Honourable Kacharia, then follow-ups.
Yeah, I had spoken, Chairperson.
Dialogue, you see, what can one expect? Conversations all over. Honourable Kacharia.
The presenter responding to my question.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Can I deal with Honourable Mantash?
No, I'm asking a question.
Okay.
Listen to me first. I'm reasonably astounded. You have said categorically that SARS is not a special category, and then proceed to say that it cannot be subject to, it needs to be treated in a special way. Now, this is in complete conflict. You can't have your cake and eat it. What are you saying, is my question.
Right now, I just want to clear this. We've all raised our questions, okay? Let's get the balance of the responses and then the follow-ups. There's Honourable Mantash's question, Ms. McQuena. Honourable Kacharia's question.
Honourable Mantash asked, what makes SARS so special and opposed to the public? Why can't it rest in South Africa and be part of the solution? Am I correct? Yes. I think I've already, you know, alluded to the fact that SARS has to treat taxpayers in a fair and equitable manner. And if an individual goes and incurs private debts and end up not being able, and let me make an example of an employed individual. They go out of their way to incur private debts and expect that there will be a debt relief that will impact on the tax collection. It shouldn't be the case. SARS has got a mandate to collect revenue. We have stringent revenue targets, which if we do not meet, then it will actually attract even the downgrade of the country. My question is, if I'm tempted not to be disturbed, let me not be disturbed. Now, if that debtor is allowed to incur debts and get a tax relief on those bases, then that will actually contribute to the low morality of those who want to be compliant. Why would I be wanting to pay tax if someone else is getting the benefit of a relief? Now, insofar as tax debts are concerned, and I repeat myself here, there are adequate provisions whereby when a taxpayer, in the instance where they lose their job, maybe their business go under, they can approach SARS and seek for a relief in the form of a debt write-off or a compromise or settle to the best means of their ability. Now, why would then, if there is primary legislation, that it should be superseded by a secondary legislation? We are not saying we don't care for the citizens. We have adequate provisions and they are being implemented.
Honourable Mantash, Honourable Kachalia.
Again, the word special is being reiterated in the very same question of Honourable Kachalia. SARS is not being treated in a special way. It's got its mandate, and its mandate is very critical, that of collection. And if there are debts, I'm repeating myself, we have provisions in the legislation which deals with how those tax debts should be treated. And I don't even see in the tax relief provisions that are being proposed the very tax relief mechanisms that we have in our own legislation. Thank you.
There are some follow-ups, thank you, Honourable Ms. Aquino. You see how it is? So we start off with first come, you know, hands up first. It'll be Honourable McPherson, Williams, Honourable Williams, Honourable Albert, Honourable Mantash. In the follow-ups, these are follow-ups now.
Thank you. Mr. Aquino, I'm not sure why you sort of come here to fight with us, because we don't want to fight with you. We just want to get to the bottom of these issues that are burning inside of us. And the truth of the matter is that pieces of legislation can trump other pieces of legislation. The BEE Act is one example of that. So you can't tell us that one act cannot supersede another one, because it can. When it comes to the way that SARS deals with no income, no asset individuals, I haven't actually heard how you treat them, to be perfectly honest. And again, I'm going to ask my question. If someone is a no-income, no-asset individual with a 50,000 Rand SARS debt, how do you treat them? And I would love to know what the cumulative figure of tax write-offs have been in the last financial year and what the average amount of that was and who those people were. Because let me tell you what, I mean, SARS currently is a very difficult institution to deal with. Should you even owe 5 Rand, they have ways to harass you to get that money back. I mean, that's a fact of matter. It's happened to me before. So I don't buy that you don't see your guys self as special. I think that you do, and I think that they can't be two sets of standards or rules for the South African public. And I mean, you know, when you talk about, you know, meeting, you know, targets, is that the only priority that you are faced with? Is that you have a target and you must meet it, and you will pursue that target at all costs? I mean, hence bonuses aren't made or paid. So just explain to us sort of how the priority, ranked priority of meeting those targets is actually dealt with.
Thanks, Honourable McPherson. Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's important for SARS to realise that this legislation that we're doing with debt relief is not really aimed at people that have got income or assets. So we're really trying to assist the poorest of the poor in South Africa. My concern is that your provisions to write off debt within SARS may be inadequate provisions, because also we don't know what this write-off means. We do definitely want more clarity around your word write-off. Does that mean it's just is extinguished completely, or do you come back and get the money later? I also want to know, you had a stance that some of the members also alluded to, where you said your primary legislation is adequate. And I'd like to know, when our bill is passed, and if it does include SARS write-off, are you saying that SARS won't will attempt to move around that legislation? Because that's what it sounds like to me, that you're just going to say, well, we've got our own write-off legislation, and we're not worried about your legislation. And I think that attitude should change immediately. Thank you.
Honourable Williams, Honourable Munn, followed by Honourable Elvis.
Mr. Person, it is a worrying factor, the manner in which the presenter is presenting herself, that she seems to be, in fact, doing what we think PCG has done, to refer to SARS as a very special entity that cannot, you know, collaborate with other departments and entities in resolving the plight of the poor in this country. May I put my question in a different form, Chairperson? Whether SARS is prepared, if this bill do see the light, will they be prepared to open a window to be part of the solution? We're not saying do not collect taxes, but we're trying to collaborate with every entity of the state to see how we can assist those that are indebted, the poor of the poorest. We're not saying we don't know your mandate. We do, but we're wanting cooperation between departments and entities of the state. Is she saying they will never be part of that because they have a special mandate, yet they take money from South Africans, so they will not be part of the solution that we're seeking as a committee?
Honourable Mantash, Honourable Albert, followed by Honourable Kachali.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that the fact that the Speaker says that they have trumping laws and provisions actually tells us that they do view themselves as special, and they are not subject to the equality provisions of the Constitution of this country, and therefore they do not have to participate in this process to help the poorest of the poor. The fact is that SARS is not a popular institution, and they have to actually work hard to change the public image that they have at the moment among all taxpaying people, but also the poor. For what people see today is that money is collected to be wasted only. And if SARS complains about not collecting enough money, then it's incumbent upon them to send a very strong message to the executive to spend less money, because there's not enough to spend, and not trying to wring money out of people already suffering. I'm talking about not the rich, but the middle class and the poorest of the poor. The middle class is becoming poorer, by the way. They do not have enough money to pay SARS anymore. So SARS has a special job to do in that regard, to make sure that they send the right message to the minister and to the executive at large, that they cannot spend money they don't have, and they can only spend what they do get in. And then to assist the poor while we try to turn around the economy of this country. If we all have full employment in this country, then we will all be gladly paying tax if we know that tax money will not be wasted. So it's quite important that SARS comes to the party and do not see itself as special, and changes its attitude towards the taxpayers in this country and the way it uses the tax administration law to infringe on people's rights? Because I think there are many provisions in the tax administration law that's actually unconstitutional. And if they do not want to, we will write a law in this committee that will trump the provisions of that law. And if they do not comply, we will take them to court. And a constitutional court will have the last say. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Albert, Honourable Kacharia.
I'd like to point out to the representatives from SARS that we are attempting to address the plight here of the poorest of the poor in a holistic manner to avoid any loopholes, to avoid any special pleading by any specific categories. For example, Furniture Store X has a business mandate from their board to collect monies in a particular way. That must be governed by law and relevant legislation. We are seeking to present relevant legislation and amend and produce, which everyone needs to comply with. As such, Furniture Store X needs to comply, and Furniture Store SARS needs to comply. Everybody needs to comply.
Thank you, Honourable Kacharia. Ms. McQueen, a couple of points is here. Just the impact on consumers, etc. I'm sure that the short notice may not have allowed you to read all of our information, but essentially, it isn't our intention in this committee bill to deal with everyone who is indebted, but rather the poorest of the poor on that bracket. And I think that, you know, we're looking at thresholds of about 7,500 income, as it were. In fact, we've been asked to look at teachers, policemen, this and that. And as you know, they are earning more than that. So we're not, you know, at this stage, we're not looking at them. I'm not saying that the committee has had the last word. But the other issue, the figure of 50,000 has been mentioned in this committee. Can SARS, you know, share with us what is in fact, what would be the tax implication on consumers of that? And is there some debt level? Is it 5,000 that you're owing to SARS? Is it 1,000 or whatever? Is there any cap that we're looking at in this direction? Because from our side, we know you need to collect revenue. We know our services depend on that. But we're hoping that you may be able to see it from where the committee bill is intending to go and relieve. It's not me as a debtor, I can assure you, but the most vulnerable. So if you would keep that in mind and respond, because so far we have had quite a collegiate cooperation. And one of the things that worried me, this is we have primary legislation, as you say. This is not secondary legislation. It's not a regulation. It's actually, we hope, going to be an act, which means it's primary legislation. But I think I do understand the point you're trying to make, that possibly, in your opinion, the tax law may be covering a lot of what we intended to address. But if you could try now and share that with us, you raise, you know, concerns have been raised in this regard. And a concern is who is being prioritized or what is being prioritized. If you can try and respond to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. If I were to deal with the question of Honourable Mr. McPherson, I would like to assure you that I am not here to fight. If I came across as fighting, might I apologize for that. Now, insofar as you stated, saying, you know, if an individual does not have any income and no assets, surely in those instances we understand that there is no taxable income and therefore that individual cannot be chased for a debt of 50 rand, as you have stated, And if it has been happening, I will have to go back to the office and actually, you know, place it on record that there is a perception or a reality out there that taxpayers are being harassed, even if those taxpayers are no longer earning any form of an income. Because I do not believe that if you do not have an income and you owe as little as 50 rand, that you should be, you know, chased. Those are the types of tax debts that must just be written off because they are uneconomical to pursue anyway. Insofar as Honorable Mr. Williams' question is concerned, we will be inclined to finish more clarity on all the debts that have been written off, both those that were written off on a temporary basis or permanent basis. Honorable Mantash, I must emphasize that as a government entity, we are open to cooperate and collaborate and assist other departments in order to can address the plight of the poorest of the poor. And having said, SARS is dealing with this matter adequately, maybe I should retract and say maybe we should actually be part and parcel of the draft to actually see to it that there is alignment with both legislations. And SARS will actually, you know, make further contributions insofar as this is concerned. Honorable Albert, I must emphasize that SARS does not want to be treated in a special manner, and we don't see ourselves as special. It is our duty to make sure that we assist to ensure that the poorest of the poor are actually being assisted. And I welcome this bill, because in as much as one is working at SARS, one is a citizen of this country, and we are all awake to the plight of our people. And there is no way I am going to sit here and pretend that I am not aware of what is going around me. But fact is, we simply do not want to encourage a stage whereby there will be a perception that other taxpayers are treated in a manner that will impact negatively on the compliance levels of the others, because if that is the case, then there will be low tax morality and we will not achieve that which we need to achieve. But yes, fact is we are alive of the plight of our poor people and we remain committed, and I am on record that we will definitely make sure that we contribute to ensure that the draft legislation is well aligned with the provisions of the tax legislation. The other one was, I think I've covered everything.
If you have, I'm looking at the members. I may not have worded my comment or question correctly. So, Ms. McQueena, you remember that reference I made to 50,000 debt cap there? What I really want to clarify is, what are the tax implications on that? So one is earning X, you know, and one has this, somehow one has accumulated this debt cap. What are the tax implications on it? On the other hand, I do agree that about moral hazards, but I think there isn't an entity in our government or an institution that doesn't in some way, you know, face a form of moral hazard, and we need to work together to reduce that level of impact.
Correct.
But if you would just explain to us about the tax implications on a 50,000 rand debt, because, yes, that's a higher figure that has been mentioned here.
On a 50,000 rand
debt cap. The cap, you know, that was the cap. Now, if, for example, as was mentioned here earlier, about 50,000,
yes.
I think the Honourable MacPherson raised the issue, am I right, Honourable MacPherson, of a 50,000 rand.
If SARS was to consider,
yes,
what the 50,000 rand
taxed, yes, that was raised by him.
I think I don't have the answers off by heart now. It's something that we'll have to look at. Yes.
I think we've already indicated, as we do to all our presenters, that you can come back in writing, you know. So let's allow Ms. McQuena the same opportunity. All right. And also, Ms. McQuena, you know, as we've engaged each other, other issues arise because of our engagement, perhaps on your side as well as our side. And we would appreciate it if there are certain things which you've overlooked here, you need, please come back to us. And what we will do, members, if we have overlooked certain things, we will put them in writing,
yes,
to Ms. McQuena. Are we agreed on that basis?
I think we are agreed.
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming here this morning.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You. If you would just switch off your mic then for a moment. And members, if we just get into the program here, you will see that we've had justice and constitutional development. So we're looking at consideration of the first draft, of course prepared by the team, but I do want to thank also our researcher, Ms. Kwanda Madalani, and if she could come a little closer to us. At this point, I think, Advocate van der Merwe, you may stay if you wish, otherwise, and perhaps you'd also like to come a bit closer if you wish. Yes. Now the debt issue, for those who came on that, you may wish to take your leave. We are dealing at this point with the BRRR, the Budgetary Review and Recommendation Report. Are we all happy about that? Now, what would have happened, yes, we have your apology, we do. Honourable Williams, we do have your apology. Now, this is, as you know, it's got your draft. The verification of figures is ongoing. You do see that. But what I asked those of you who were present at our last meeting was that this would at least give you some idea as to where the report is heading, and perhaps you could put forward some draft conclusions and recommendations. That's what this is for. Are we all agreed on that? The introduction, as you know, is only done when we've been through the report, so one gets an understanding of what the committee members are saying about it. Right. On that note then, just allow me a minute. Can we make a start? I will direct you to the one in question, the page. We've all got the same. It's page 17. Right. And if you look at page 17, and you also look, if you, for relevance, you would have looked at the back to see who was it we engaged, if indeed you may have forgotten. We engaged with the DTI, the Auditor General. We engaged with SIPC. I'm looking at page 57 briefly for a minute. The Consumer Commission. the South African Bureau of Standards, the national regulator for compulsory specs, and that was it, all right? So now page 17. Now what happens here is you would have been making comments throughout your engagement, all right? And now what the staff have done is pulled together what you've done. But before, I've been a little rude, I must apologize, because I do see the acting group operating officer here, in place of Ms. Jody Skoltz. And you can perhaps just introduce yourself.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon to the honourable members. My name is Nondombi Matomela. As the Chair has indicated, I am the Acting Group Chief Operations Officer for the time that Jody is away.
Thank you very much, Ms. Matomela. And sitting next to her, just to assist, we know is Ms. Naidu. Right. So, what we're looking at here, the issues, page 17. Is it page 17 for all of you? For some, I'm told it's page 16. I'm looking at what I thought everyone had. Page 17, 4.3. You all got 4.3? There we are, okay. 4.3. The numbering is correct. Maybe the paging isn't. 4.3. Yes, Tiako?
I am a document. Page 16. It doesn't have that thing. I don't have your document, Shay, unfortunately. I don't have it. I don't have it.
Ms. Van Skalk, Honourable Van Skalkbeek's got it. Who else has got 4.3? Can I see by show of hands? Who has got 4.3, a number? Have you got it, Honourable Albert?
Madam Chin, I don't have a copy of the document itself.
Got it? Have you got it, Honourable Kachalia and Honourable McPherson, Honourable Tiaka?
Sure, we do have, but your page that you are stating, it's page 16 instead of...
So if I may, I stopped from page 17 and 16, and I said 4.3. And I think that should be clear enough, that 4.3 is not a page. 4.3, issues raised during the deliberations. This is what you raised, all right, as a committee, which the members here captured for you, the staff. Now, I am going to go on the heading of the title, Failure of State-Owned Entities to Support Localization and Local Procurement. And the concerns there were raised, and people were asking if the committee could in any way, the minister could in any way compel them. You can see that carrying on there, I won't mention a page again, we'll just carry on. Now, because it's clearly confusing. Yes, Honourable?
To maybe alleviate that confusion, the way in which the document has been set out, it's having the title of sections at the bottom of the page. And so that's a bit problematic. Like you said, the 4.3 is sitting at the bottom of the page, and then you have to turn over for 4.3 to actually start. They should have pressed enter and put that at the top of, you know what I mean?
I think that these are things that are technical issues, you know. Mr. Hermans, can I ask you to give me the document that everyone has got, please? There's a copy here. I've never had this problem with the BRRR in 15, 25 years or something, I must say. How long has it been going for? It's been going for about 8 years. So you go on further down. There's a reference to Transnet. It's all the state-owned entities, but one of the issues raised is the Competitive Supplier Development Program. The aim is indicated there very clearly, and the minister told us that he's raised this issue many, many times with them. Our concern was that what could be done about it. Towards the end of that bullet, it says he also raised the concerns that some tenders were granted in the name of black economic empowerment, with these companies importing most of their products rather than producing them locally. You see how that's related to our localization inquiry. Another bullet. Implementation, effective implementation of and adherence to local public procurement policy. And it was there that the committee asked whether they, you know, the minister was considering some form of mechanism to monitor this. We then move across, I would hope by now we've all got the same document, and we carry on with that on the next page. And there was a reference to which we had already had in a separate meeting, I think last year, with the Auditor General, indicating that they, you know, possibly this could be done by them, or we requested whether or not this could. And there was that kind of discussion in terms of monitoring. So we were then informed, the committee, that the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation would be looking at the entire scope of localization. And I must say, in the Manco committee, we did have Mr. Dix with us at the time, who was assisting us in terms of our terms of reference for our inquiry, upcoming inquiry. We then go to the issue around the revised World Trade Organization's agreement of government procurement, which, as you know, we didn't sign the public procurement side. We only signed for the private sector. So the public, we can do this without violating the WTO rules. The third bullet, contract between government and Chinese parastatals. The committee expressed a real concern about the $70 billion contract. That is a lot of money. And how South African industry would benefit from such an investment. We were informed by the minister that this refers to two infrastructure projects, the Maloto Corridor and the Imzi-Ruvo Dam. But that the minister asked us, please, would we, in his view, all of the infrastructure should try to use local suppliers and locally manufactured products. And that localization did not imply, and this is what we must, this is very important, this term here, phrase, localization did not imply that the company had to be a South African company. We've got foreign investment here, and we see this very often among the vehicle issues. We know that, all right? A foreign investor investing, etc., and that's all explained. The minister informed that he was unable to respond to the committee in terms of these projects as it falls under the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee. I do think in future we would have to factor in an engagement with that committee. Do we agree? In future, not for this one. The Black Industrialist Program, fourth bullet. The committee welcomed the progress of the program as it promotes the growth of black-owned and managed companies, etc. Talking about bullets, I have often requested that we try to use what is called the Harvard numbering system so that you have an idea what bullet you're on, you know, or A, B, C, D or something. Anyway, it goes on simply to state what that is and inquired that of the 7,000 jobs created, how many were permanent, etc. Reference to the basic conditions for service, and we move on to the triple B, another bullet, triple B, double E, compliance. Concerns were raised around compliance and we were informed of the new threshold for major transactions, which a major transaction would be around 25 million. Did I see a hand? No. And ownership, etc. And this threshold must be applied retrospectively. I think that's an important aspect to look at and understand what is meant by that. And must be registered with the commission. Please verify the state within, you know, 60 calendar days. And it says it has to exclude, what is it yet, or concluded on or after 24th October. So that's still being verified. We all know what we said there. I'm sure we can remember. The issue here is that entities can be excluded from doing business with government for a period of up to 10 years. That's one of the penalties, if you like, sanctions. The DTI's role in developing the mining charter. The minister explained that was in response to a direct question put by a committee member that, quite frankly, this was purely in a supportive way and that the mining charter was being developed by the Department of Mineral Resources in compliance with the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act and not with the BBBEE legislation. That should be very clear. Virement. The committee noted that the budget for consumer and corporate regulation had been fully spent. But a request for a virement of $1.4 million to this program was approved. This was done, and this is the important point here, and we need to clarify that, notwithstanding the fact that the division had not met all its targets. Do you see that there? The committee inquired, what are the reasons for this? You know, you're agreeing to a virement, you haven't met all your targets. The DTI informed the committee that all virements require National Treasury approval. The request for additional funding was for legal fees and with respect to the legislation introduced in Parliament to augment the operational budget. So the question that the committee needs to ask themselves and answer is, all right, so you haven't met all your targets, but you're asking for more money. Is this in fact valid? And I think the reason given for legal fees for bills on the table, probably members would consider a valid reason or justification. Overpayment of salaries. The committee inquired to the reasons for the overpayment, informed that this related to employees that resigned during the year. One of the limitations to the salary system, this is something we need to take up with Treasury maybe, aren't they the ones who design these systems, are they? Are they the ones that design these systems, salary systems? Ms. Mileta, yes. Was that all government employees received their salaries on the 15th of each month. If any staff member resigned after payday, the DTI would recover the money from the employee's pension fund. All monies owed to the DTI is recovered through debt management practices. Is that a sufficient explanation? Right. Quality of legislation introduced in Parliament. The committee raised a number of concerns about the quality of legislation. And you see, this is a very serious issue, Ms. Malota, because it means that we haven't really, in our, I'm sure, parliamentary budget, we wouldn't have catered possibly for sufficient legal costs here, because we don't craft our own legislation. We brief an advocate who may even have to bring in other legal resources to do this. But on top of it, it means it stretches the bill maybe an extra year. This bill was tabled, the copyright, for example, last year, if I'm not mistaken, came up this year, at the beginning. And, you know, why is it so delayed? So I think that sort of issue is important if you would raise it with the department. And there we are, the Farnham Commissioners mentioned, etc. And now that, because the minister fully appreciated the challenge, he said the DTI, or rather the DTI pointed out, but I know the minister had indicated this, that they would be delaying the liquor and gambling legislation to address crafting shortcomings. Now, this is a serious matter because the gambling legislation, honourable members, since 2009 has been forthcoming. It's quite a serious issue. So you can see what happens when this arises, okay? Anyway, there it is. We've addressed that one. Vacancies within the DTI. The committee noted with concern that key positions have not yet been filled. Mentions these positions. It also says that the DTI informed the committee that the position for DDG has been advertised with a closing date set 15th September. I'm not sure if the DDG of what? Is this the DDG of CCRD? Yes. May be pertinent to say that. I mean, we know that OTA does say that here, in fact. It does refer to that. The position of a gambling regulator would be filled once the relevant legislation is amended. Right, we go to the next bullet, regression, with regard to the audit performance of entities. There was a regression with certain entities there, but it was largely, from what one understands, to do with compliance with supply chain management. Do we agree there? There is a need for these entities to prepare an audit action plan. Are we making sure we get that? Copy of that? Huh? Okay, right, okay. The Auditor General said to inform the committee that the entity is most concerned with is the NCC. Did the committee say that they showed a lack of urgency? The NCC showed a lack of urgency. I'm asking, I don't...
It was in the Auditor General's report, Chair.
Oh, it was in the Auditor. So it's him, because to me it's not clear if it's the committee or the Auditor General. Do you follow? Honourable Williams.
Chairperson, we take the Auditor General's report and then obviously talk to it. So when the Auditor General said that there was a lack of urgency in providing the accurate information, then we picked it up and then we did raise it as well. So I don't think we should say, well, that's what the Auditor General said. The Auditor General said something in a meeting with us, and then when we engage with the entities, it's what the committee said, not just the Auditor General anymore.
Are you happy with that then, everyone? I don't see anyone dissenting. All right, let's move on. Financial and non-financial performance of identified entities. SABs. Just goes on to that, but can we just move to where we raise key concerns? You can read about if you move on and on, it's 5.1.3. It looks as if it could be on the bottom of page 24. 5.1.3. Right. And then I think the point that Honourable Williams is making, and then you swiftly turn over. The reason my copy was different, I corrected that personally at home. Anyway, assurance and key control measures. Well, it was raised there, and you will recall there was a difference of opinion between SABs and on the CRAP and the Auditor General's view on things. And when we got to the end of this eventually, the Auditor General was that it was due to a material misstatement. That was their view. Okay. In line with the PFMA, etc. But I do recall that SABs informed the committee that it was not on CRAP and that the regression was due to a change in the accounting framework. I don't think this is very clearly spelt out here. And if we recall, we actually had, this was quite a huge thing because we ourselves had to look it up. We couldn't work it out. So SADS is adamant. Now, I don't know if they remain adamant. I don't know. And so members of staff should let me know. Are they still adamant that this should not have been viewed in that light? Did they have another engagement with the Auditor General? That's what we told them to do. We said, please engage with the Auditor General. Yes, Ms. Maletto.
Thank you, Chair. There was an engagement between SADS and the Auditor General, and the AG in the end actually even gave us something in writing confirming that it was indeed what SADS was saying was the reason.
Very clear. Was it what, you know, yes, Honourable Mansash?
That has not been communicated to the committee, we don't know.
You know, you have been away, but when I looked at it here, it wasn't very clear. You know, if I'm reading this for the first time, is that what I'm going to get? Is that how I will understand what has been said? That is the concern I'm raising. Yes? Yes, do go ahead.
I think, Chair, in the document, it's not as clear as it's supposed to be, but there was something in writing from the AG, so I think we just need to revise.
We don't encourage public disagreements between entities, departments, and the AG. Obviously not. We hope that all these things would have been ironed out before it got to us. Oh, is it your
turn? Chair, the SADS provided the committee and we distributed last week. And with that response, with the engagement with the AG and SADS, is captured exactly as they put it down here. We'll just make sure that maybe clear, it's put clear, but they did submit a response, they did indicate that they engaged, and the AG confirmed that SARPS was correct in the interpretation of the engagement that we had on the 12th.
Yeah, you see, you explained it very succinctly in good layman's terms now. Yes, Honourable Mantash.
I'm sorry to be dragging the committee up. I would request that I be offered that piece of submission, please.
Just a digression, but staff should always ensure that those who have been away for a couple of weeks should try, just to ascertain that they've received all the documents. All right. It's a quick one. Now, let's move on. But I want it clearer than that, because I know the way members read these reports, and it's not going to be immediately clear. That's what worries me. The action plan to address audit findings, yes, they have one there. The next one is revenue. Now, this was another issue that was raised sharply by the committee, the revenue. The digitization, etc. We asked for that plan. I remember, I think it was SADS who indicated they were expanding on this plan. Now, you may have sent it to me, but I don't recall going through it. I remember my own notes on it. All right, you'll have to go back on it again. Infrastructural challenges, that was raised as well. The laboratory. National Consumer Commission. And then we go to the next one, should include, but now let's go to the actual issue, and let's point 5.2.3. It probably is page 31. Right, the concern on a number of key control measures, the high number of disciplinary cases, and the number of vacancies. We then have training and skills development. The National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications. What we did ask for, and I haven't seen a letter from both of them saying that they've had this meeting. They actually did manage to say hello to each other on the campus and have a cup of tea. Who was it? It was the National Regulator for Compulsory Specs and SAD. And NCC offered to mediate. Do you remember that public meeting in the old assembly chamber? Yes. I hope that there has been such a meeting with the National Regulator and SAD. Has there been? Has there been such a meeting? Since our engagement, when we instructed them to go and have a meeting, have they? All right. From our side, then, we hope to get that confirmation tomorrow. All right? It's time to get that information tomorrow. Then we go to the what they've done, 5.3. Let's look at the 2.1, go through that for a while. So we get to the actual issue. Should be 5.3. Key issues on page 39. 5.3.3, is that right? Assurance and key control measures. Status of the Ford Cougar investigation. There we are, we're all authorities on that. The NRCS. At the top of page 41, I think we're now on the same pages, the NRCS, based on the above rationale, concluded that the relevant compulsory specification does not specify which relate to the what relates. That must be not which. What relates to the cause of the fires. It says, however, requested it should keep it updated on any developments. After implementation, only one case was recalled. Then NRCS will continue to engage with this other group with a view to conduct its own investigation. Right. Status of regulations on vehicle system technology. They then go on to the different ways and how this, what they do internationally, what is required nationally, etc. Go through that very carefully because it's one of the important points raised. On page 42, in the middle of the page, is another bullet. What is interesting is just before interim requirements for tolling, just before that, it says, except for electromagnetic interference checks, which ensures compliance with the Electronics Communications Act, the compulsory specifications do not specify any requirements for vehicle electronics or vehicle computer boxes. And, you know, we raised this as quite a serious issue that they need to take up. And I'm saying this because these are some of the things that should be in your conclusion. You know, what are we continue to be concerned with, which we may need to come up again. That's why we emphasize them. The interim requirements for tolling. The legal metrology. Following page 43, the verification systems and SANAS. The verification body will be designated by NRCS and legal metrology to perform verifications in terms of the Act once accreditation is in place. verifications on each e-tolling point shall take place at intervals not exceeding 12 months. Now, I don't know, and I'm looking at staff here now, if we have ever ascertained whether this, you know, called in these tolls or been able to check if they've done that. Because we're making this statement, but have, you know, it's just a statement. We haven't checked on it, have we? To my knowledge. Yes, Ms. Madalani?
Chair, this is a statement from the NRCS. We'll have to do a follow-up on how far they are on this. Thanks.
Because we're just accepting this in good faith, you see? The status of electrotechnical LOA backlog. And there we get that. Now, they're on this risk-based approach, full manual implementation using list checklists. The RBA has been intensified to include low-risk and medium-at-risk applications. Right, we continue to track that. Implementation of the Information and Communication Technology, the ICT. Oh, sorry, Honourable MacPherson.
Tell you why I doubt that, because in the Sunday Times, under the risk-based, in the Sunday Times, the NRCS was advertising for an implementing officer, a development officer or something like that, for the ICT system. So, I mean, they haven't even gone anywhere near where they were supposed to do. So I don't even know that risk-based management approach is actually working as how it's written there. I don't even believe it's up, to be fair. Well, it can't be if they're still advertising for people trying to, you know, get the thing going.
You know, when I look at this, Honourable MacPherson, you know, on the ITT side, you know, sort of ITC, the computer side, I think that they're referring to the manual. Just let me read this. Furthermore, the NRCS appointed 6 candidate inspectors who are undergoing an accelerated on completion of specific modules. Candidate inspectors will be able to evaluate these applications. The RBA is now on full manual implementation. They haven't yet gone to the computer yet. So it could be, no, and we need to check this, of course, next time we engage. Now that you've got the manual up and running, exactly when are you going to shift to computer? Yes, Honourable MacPherson?
Well, then I think it should be noted that they have now completely abandoned their target for this to be implemented by December this year, the electronic version.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying now. Uh-huh. Because it does refer to manual. Let's see what it says further down here in the next bullet, which seems to be about ICT. The concerns were raised there. When is this coming? What is the delay? And they now say the modernization project must be led by X and Y. Now, hang on, where's this delay referred to? The NRCS informed the committee that the necessary internal skills do not reside, hence probably the advert. Then they say they're going to go. Now, what's the delay and why? Other factors that contributed to the delay in implementation. So I think, Honourable MacPherson, this is a second delay, so obviously we need to follow it up. Let's put that in the conclusion. Remember I said we're flagging issues for the conclusion. What we later flag for into recommendations, you know, we'll come to. Can we agree on that?
Sure.
Yeah. All right, let's move. On the change management, etc., National Credit Regulator. Oh, yeah. The Act requires the NCR to promote X and Y. Let's go to the actual issues we raised. That is page 50, I think. 5.4.3. The following concerns were raised. poor auditing performance. They got a qualified audit. In future, if the decline is not, it could lead to a qualified audit. The committee noted the concerns of that and also that the direction could lead to a qualified if it is not arrested or addressed. So they did ask, we asked the NCR what measures were in place, and we were told a lot of these issues relate to, according to the AG, to leadership and oversight responsibility, is that it? And also methodology. You know, this HAP issue seems to float all over the place. I think the group chief operating officer must address this generically with us at some point. All right. Vacancy rate. An update on the current vacancy rate within the NCR. It's now at 18.4%, and four of these are critical positions. They did indicate that their senior staff had been poached by the banks, which indicates they must really be training them properly. Office space challenges, that's noted here. Several little bullets on page 51. Current premises, health hazard, in cases of emergency, this high maintenance, etc., which may occur in the current time. You know, the whole point here is all one issue bullet. It's all under this issue of their premises, isn't it? So I don't think you need six bullets to say that, all right? But what is here, the high maintenance, where are these? Well, we know where their premises are, and it's putting a strain on the current budget. The application of HRAP. We then asked the NCR to provide an explanation against theirs, which they did. They asked us to read this together with the framework for the preparation and presentation of annual financial statements. And that's why I say to the chief operating officer, you know, this keeps on coming up, and we do need clarification. Labor relations. For the dismissal at the end, the dismissals or dismissals, because it's two. One individual was charged with assault. My gosh, what's going on there in this office? Huh? One with assault, the other with misrepresentation of qualifications. you know what this sounds like if I'd read this in a newspaper? I'm HR and you, you know, got the wrong qualifications and you belt me one. You know, but it's obviously two different things, isn't it? And they weren't in conversation together. Totally unrelated. Based on deliberations, final conclusions. You see, the conclusions aren't there. Can you see that? We need that from you. So I want to advise all of you to go to your, you know, caucuses, but also individually to come back and to be considering your recommendations. The rest here, as you see, is an appreciation. Now, members, on this, I would like from yourself now to hear just in a minute from each one of you, or at least a couple of you. I'll be doing that introduction. What you honestly believe should be highlighted there, before getting into the meat of the report. Any reflection? Want to come later on the issue? Just a general... Yes, Honourable Mantash?
Chairperson, I wouldn't have a quality input on the or comment on the matter because I was absent most of the time. But I want to appreciate the work done so far, and would love that the grey areas that were not explicitly mentioned be done so, and minimize repetition of issues raised in the report. Thank you.
The other thing, there are quite a few technical and semantic issues, etc., which I know the staff now that they've had, you know, had a chance to clean up will be changed. I think the point I'm making is there has to be a way of your caucuses, you know, that kind of thing. But I don't think we can delay them beyond Wednesday, except for an adoption on Thursday evening. You know, would be almost the final. So we would want to hear from you tomorrow on these other issues, so that really, if we can, we'd adopt it on the 18th, but if we can't, it will go to Thursday night. Do you understand? In the light of people feeling that they do just want to clear this with their caucuses. Do we agree on that proposal, Uncle Tierko?
Yes, Chair, I agree on the proposal. Give us time, then we'll go to our caucuses and then we'll inform you accordingly.
Thank you.
Can we please have members to submit any conclusions? You don't have to write the whole conclusion, but the issue, the point, this evening, please. Please submit it this evening and have in mind your recommendation and try and submit that Wednesday or Thursday. Let's work on that basis. I will also then have the introduction ready for you tomorrow, but I will do that introduction at 6:30 in the morning. So anything coming in tonight will be factored in. But remember, you're not adopting it, instantly. We do want you to work towards Wednesday, but absolutely finally on Thursday night. Can we agree on that? I'm looking at staff who have to do all this work. Do you think that'll be possible? And can I thank the three of you on, you know, yourself, Ms. Madalani, Ms. Sheldon, and Mr. Hermans, and I don't know if Mr. Medina had anything. No. The three of you flat out on this. Thank you. Now, members, there is just, how many of us are there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We never had a quorum the other day. Who was here? I think you were here, weren't you, Honourable Von Skolfeek? And we needed to pass these minutes. And we can only pass minutes with 7. You know, 50% plus 1. So please, can we pass them now? Right, let's go, Mr. Hermans. Where are the minutes? Is this it?
No.
Right, 4th of August. I'm just mentioning those are the minutes we'll be doing. The 4th of August, the 3rd of August, the 4th of August. Two sets of minutes. All agreed? Right. I'll just wait until you get them. Before I do that, someone does believe they've been appointed acting chair. Who is the person that writes on the register for members? Only the chair. You're only allowed to put your own signature on there. And only the committee secretary can write on it, and the chair. Who else feels they're now acting or they've appointed themselves as deputy chair? Someone has. I would ask you to refrain from any remarks on the register. That is a legal document. Please refrain from that. Right. 3rd of August. You then had public hearings on the Copyright Amendment Bill. Just checking to see all the... Are you telling me that the Honourable Bhuyani was here on the 3rd of August? No, he hasn't come back since the accident. Who put him here? The 3rd of August. Then, easy ways to see if he signed himself in. No, there was no one signing in. You see what happens? Just ticks. All right, let's move. Page 1. page 2. Page 3. Page 4. We have somebody to propose adoption of the agenda of the minutes. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Okay.
Yes.
Honourable Mbuyana was in because I know that day I was not in myself.
We must, I'm not sure who chaired, who was the secretary, because we must sign this document. But it could be that the document was signed, and sometimes documents are mislaid. All right. Okay. That, can we have someone to propose adoption? Thanks, Honourable Manta, seconded by the Honourable Van Skalkwyk. August the 4th. August the 4th, eh? Right. Yes, I think you're right about the previous day, because it was when he went on party business with the deputy chief whip that he, you know, sometime during that period he had an accident. Page 1, page 2, page 3. Page 4. Right, thank you very much. Now you've done the 2 minutes we have. What was passed last week, Mr. Medima?
The one for the 15th and the one for the 2nd.
So what is outstanding?
The second was adopted, but the first had some technical errors which we are fixing, and then we'll move on to the
second. All right. Because I'd like to hear from you tomorrow which minutes are outstanding, because there are some minutes that have been amended. And if you have not here. Members, on the program that we've got in front of us,
because it'll be after the House if necessary. If the point is this, we don't have a choice, or do you want to slot in Friday now? We really have to meet. And I honestly think we can practically address this, can't we? So let us leave this to Mr. Hermans and not debate the issue. It's Thursday night. Wednesday we were given a deadline. We're not meeting that deadline, and therefore it's Thursday night. That's all. Honourable MacPherson?
I won't be attending on Thursday night. I have commitments already.
someone here, won't you, from the DA?
I haven't spoken to the Honourable Kachalia. So
well, he hasn't raised his hand. However, you have two alternates. Please discuss it with them, please. It's either that or we'll have to ask to meet tomorrow night. And I really think we don't have to do that. I think we can do Wednesday and Thursday night. All right? Thank you very much. All right, now, is there anything else you want to add? I also want to remind you that the Joint Finance and Transformation are meeting tomorrow. You have all been sent what was given to all of us, and that is the responses. That takes place from 11 until 1 or, what is it, until 2. Oh, until 5 o'clock. That's basically almost the closure for one more meeting. And we have got three issues in that report. Can we then adjourn and meet tomorrow? That is Wednesday at half. We've got 8 o'clock here. 8 o'clock? Yes, I said we've got 8 o'clock, but I'm mindful of the rain and the buses. But we are going to, we have sent a complaint to Parliament about the buses making their own schedules. There is apparently a 6:45 bus back in track, on track from Acacia Park. That is what I have been informed. So we hope you will be here at 8 and we'll take debt off. Thank you very much. The venue will be V454 tomorrow. V, not 226.
We request SMSs, please. You forward us the SMSs.
No, you always get an SMS from, you know, but all we are saying for those who prefer to get the information now, we are not meeting in V226. Thank you.